nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, a very pleasant good morning to you, fun seekers. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. Patrick Timpone, and we kick off another week of video live streaming on OneRadioNetwork.com. Hope you had a nice weekend. Next hour, Dr. Mark Cercas down in Brazil. He's here on the second Monday of the month. We talked to him for a few hours about health and healing and some of the stuff that he's going through in Brazil. And so he'll be here. Tomorrow, Morley, the magnesium man. Yeah, he's a great guy. So he's going to join us. And we have some good people this week as well. So you stick around. If you'd like to join the show, you can do it. 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. OneRadioNetwork.com. John Ladd is with us. He's a PhD, and he's here this morning. He's a president of Crime Prevention Research Center, CPRC, founded by Mr. Lott. He's an economist, and he's an expert on guns and crime. He's done a lot of research, teaching positions around the country, University of Chicago, Yale University, Wharton School, University of Pennsylvania, Stanford. He was chief economist at the United States Sentencing Commission during the 88-89 period, PhD in economics from UCLA, Nobel laureate. He's written a bunch of books, include More Guns, Less Crime, The Bias Against Our Guns, Freedomomics, Dumbing Down the Courts, and he has his latest one. It's called Gun Control Myth, John Lott. Mr. Lott, very pleasant good morning to you, sir. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir. Missoula, Montana. Ah. Do you like it out there?
It's fine.
Is it fine? Yeah. So what are some of the gun control myths? What are some of the big myths out there that people believe about gun control that aren't true?
My book goes through 36 of them. Just one example is, what people should do when they're confronted by a criminal. Many times in the media, they talk about people behaving passively. Another example is, just dealing with mass public shootings. People have this perception that the United States somehow leads the world in terms of mass public shootings, and nothing's even remotely close to, that's not even remotely close to being true. I mean, it's understandable why the media covers attacks in the United States more than other countries, but it still gives people kind of the misimpression. Few people would know, for example, that 94% of the mass public shootings that we have in the United States occur in places where guns are banned. The successful attacks occur there because these attackers know that if they go to a place where people can't defend themselves, they're going to be more successful in doing it. Nor do they know that the attacks that aren't successful, that we constantly have attacks, just dozens in just the last few years that have been stopped by concealed carry permit holders. They just don't get national news coverage when permit holders stop these attacks. And when in a couple cases where they do get national news coverage, the national media has completely botched the story and usually gotten it backwards. There are lots of other issues like whether a presence of a gun in the home leads more likely to suicide, whether suicides committed with guns are, quote unquote, more successful than suicides involving other types of methods. And I could go on, but those are just a few of the myths that are there.
Yeah, okay. So, who are, in your opinion, you've studied this a long time, Mr. Lott, who are the forces, in your opinion, behind this? I mean, it's easy to say the political left because they own the media, but it has to go deeper than that, no? Yes?
Well, I mean, I think there's you know, I think there's lots of reasons for this. I mean, just look generally at the issue between liberals and conservatives that are there. You look at surveys, probably the one issue that differentiates them the most is the issue of gun control. And, you know, I suppose the easiest way of just explaining that mm-hmm. is you take something like healthcare regulations in the United States. You know, Obamacare put down exactly what people could have in terms of health insurance coverage. You have very little leeway on that. The only decisions that people really have to make now is the size of their deductible. Well, the thing is, if you don't trust people to be able to decide what their health insurance is going to cover, you know, trusting them with owning a weapon is kind of the ultimate in to be able to make decisions or not. And so it's not too surprising that, you know, liberals are against private ownership of guns. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think as far as a lot of the current debate goes, it has to do a lot with a guy named Michael Bloomberg, who's spending literally many hundreds of millions of dollars to try to push this. You know, just in the last election cycle, he spent $110 million on congressional races, even more on state legislative races, tens of millions of dollars more in other races. You know, by contrast, if you look at the NRA, they spent $18.9 million on all races that year. But, you know, it's more than that. Mm-hmm. He spends hundreds of millions of dollars on pushing gun control research. So, I mean, my guess is a lot of the debate in the United States wouldn't be anything near where it is without, you know, without Michael Bloomberg being involved.
The people in our culture, Mr. Lott, that push for gun control, with all your experience, are there some deep philosophical reasons other than, well, more guns, there's more crime?
Well, I just went through that, didn't I? I can repeat what I said.
No, that's okay.
Just,
well, all right.
You know, it's. I think that there's a distinct difference between people who trust individuals to make decisions mm-hmm. and those who don't trust individuals to make decisions. And, you know, and I think that applies to lots of areas, just not just gun control, though that's one example of mm-hmm. that.
More personal responsibility and such. People taking responsibility,
well,
yeah.
Who do you trust to make decisions? Do you think you need to have some smart person there, quote-unquote smart person, making decisions for other people? You know, the irony is now the very same people who are pushing gun control in the United States are, many of them, like Michael Bloomberg's groups, are arguing for disarming the police. Bloomberg's groups have been putting out lots of stories about how we'd be better off if the police didn't have guns.
Yes, sir.
I'm not exactly sure how they think that would work. You look at lots of countries that have extremely strict gun control. Brazil, for example, a country you mentioned earlier, you know, they only about 0.2% of the adult population in Brazil is, as of a couple of years ago, was legally licensed to own a gun in the country. And yet Brazil has a murder rate that's over six times higher than the murder rate in the United States. Mexico has less than 1% of the adult population that's legally licensed to own a gun. They've had one gun store in the country since 1972. Guns are very expensive. The most powerful gun that you're able to legally buy in Mexico since 1972 is a 22 caliber rifle. You know, Mexico also has a murder rate that's about six times higher than what we have here in the United States. And, you know, the point is that it's very difficult to stop criminals from getting guns. Just It's about as easy to stop criminals from getting guns as it is to stop them from getting illegal drugs. The main source of the illegal guns are drug dealers. It's not like a drug dealer can go to the police and say, look, this other drug dealer stole my drugs. Can you help us get them back?
Mm-hmm.
They have to set up their own militaries in order to try to protect that extremely valuable property that they have. You know, in Mexico, the drug gangs bring in weapons from around the world to go and protect that valuable property. Just in recent 5-year period, the Mexican government had confiscated something like over 15,000 grenades from Mexican drug gangs. They're not buying grenades or rocket launchers from gun stores in the United States. They're bringing them around from, just as they bring in the drugs from the rest of the world, they're bringing in these high-powered weapons, machine guns and other things from the rest of the world in order to protect the valuable property that they have.
What do you make of that story in St. Louis where they're trying to, indict the people that, you probably saw the story, they wanted to protect themselves.
Sure. Well, they have indicted the Michaels, but
they have.
So, yeah, right. So anyway, here's the irony, and that is basically it just shows that elections matter. The district attorney in St. Louis has refused to file charges against any of the rioters that the police have arrested. Mm-hmm. The police have only been arresting the most egregious cases. But what you find in this case here, you have this couple who anybody's been watching the riots and the destruction of property in St. Louis. The rioters had broken down the gate to the community, were on a private road, were actually in the yard for these people, yelling threats that they were going to burn down the house, that they were going to do other damage to the property. You know, it seems perfectly reasonable to me for somebody to brandish a gun, say, look, we're going to defend ourselves. It's not rocket science. If you want to reduce crime, the most obvious way is to make it riskier for criminals to go and commit crime with higher arrest rates, higher conviction rates, but also making it possible for victims to be able to go and defend themselves. That also makes it riskier for criminals to commit crime. And when you have a district attorney who refuses to file criminal charges against any of the rioters, but going and literally sending the police in to confiscate the guns from the couple there, and then filing felony charges against them, you know, you're doing the exact opposite. You're kind of going out of your way to make it clear to criminals that they have nothing to worry about.
John Lott, PhD in economics, and he's president of Crime Prevention Research Center. He's in Montana this morning. We're going to talk to him for a few minutes. Mr. Lott, do you think background checks that are in place in many places and some want to do more are a violation of the Second Amendment?
No, I mean, I never make arguments based on the Second Amendment. To me, the issue is, do they accomplish what you want them to accomplish? And the problem is that these background check system that we have is a complete mess. When you go and you hear that there's 2.7 million dangerous prohibited people that have been stopped from buying guns because of background checks, that's simply false. What they should say is that there have been 2.7 million initial denials, and something over 99% of those are mistakes. You know, it's one thing to stop a felon from buying guns. It's another thing to stop somebody simply because they have a name similar to a felon from buying a gun. There's no reason why those mistakes should be occurring. You know, when you go and you buy a gun, you fill out the 4473. What you put down is your name, your social security number, your address, your birthday, your race, your eye color. And you think they're using all that information. What they end up using is roughly phonetically similar names and similar birthdays in virtually all cases. And that creates a lot of mistakes. you know, if by contrast, you know, if private employers who do background checks on employees had an error rate that was 1/100 the error rate that the federal government has in doing these background checks, under federal law, they'd be sued out of existence. You know, why not simply make the federal government have to meet the same standards for doing background checks that private employers have to make? And the problem is, you know, the people who get harmed the most by these mistakes are minorities. People tend to have names similar to others in their racial groups. Hispanics tend to have names similar to other Hispanics. Blacks tend to have names similar to other blacks. 33% of black males in the United States are legally prohibited from owning guns because of past criminal history. Well, whose names are their names most likely to be confused with? Other law-abiding, good black males who want to have a gun to protect themselves and their families. It's easy to fix. Just have the federal government have to meet the same standards for doing background checks that the federal government mandates that private companies have to do. But Democrats will fight you tooth and nail against that, claiming that it will be a poison pill. You know, for the life of me, I can't figure out why you'd want to have those types of mistakes. I mean, they claim that they care about poor minorities, and yet they set up the system which makes it so that poor minorities are the very people who can't defend themselves. Now, when the government makes a mistake, you can go and appeal. The vast majority of people will be required to hire a lawyer to go through the process.
Right.
And you're talking about $3,000 on up to go and hire a lawyer to fix a mistake that's the government's fault, not individuals. And that's only part of the problems. You know, I'll give you another example, and that is just the cost of the background check system. When you go and buy a new gun, you don't see the cost of the background checks because it's not like a sales tax that gets added on top of the price of the gun. You only see that when you have these background checks on private transfers of guns. And, you know, you'll see places like in Oregon, it's like $55 for a background check. In Washington, D.C., it's $125 to do a background check on each gun. In New York City, it's around $200 to do a background check on a private transfer of most guns there. You know, whether it's $55 or $125 or $200, that may not stop you or I from being able to go and purchase a gun. But if my research convinces me of anything, it's people who are most likely victims of violent crime, poor blacks who live in high crime urban areas. And, you know, $100 may make the difference between a poor black being able to legally buy a gun or not. And, you know, if you believe that these background checks reduce crime, and I don't, for some of the reasons why we talked about earlier, you know, if you believe that, then there's a couple points to raise. One is, if you really want to encourage people to go and do background checks, do you really want to tax them $100 for doing what you want them to do? It seems like you may want to reward them for doing it, but the very thing you don't want to make them have to pay a large fee for going out of their way to obey the law that's there. And so one question is, well, if you want to encourage people to do this and you think that there's a benefit to society, because it's not just the person who's buying the gun who's supposedly going to benefit, the vast majority of benefits going to be going to other people if you believe it's going to reduce crime generally, pay for it out of general revenue. But again, if you try to suggest that, gun control advocates will fight you tooth and nail on that. They insist that the entire cost be borne by the individual who's buying the gun. And that indicates to me that, because I've been making this argument to them for 20 years, that they could get these background checks passed easily if they would just make a couple simple changes, fix the mistakes, make the federal government have to abide by the same rules that private companies have to abide by, and pay for the cost of this out of general revenue so that the entire burden of these benefits that are being supposedly being produced for others isn't borne by the individual, the law-abiding individual who's going out of their way to do the background check. But they'll fight against you on those, even what I consider very simple, reasonable reforms.
John Lotz, PhD in economics, Patrick Timpone. Mr. Lotz, stay right there. Please, we're going to just take a little break, and we'll come back and wrap it up. He is president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. If you have an email, a question, just email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, or a comment before he leaves, 888-663-6386. 888-663-6386. Oh, this is not the one I want. That's the one I want. Previously, we were talking with Brandon about the Blue Shield EMF device, and he says it goes out 90 yards in all directions.
It's an omnidirectional field that, if you think about a huge sphere that's expanding, that's essentially what the waveform pattern looks like.
Oh, that's cool. So it's putting frequencies into the body, and then how does that work in relation to electromagnetic field that's coming in the walls and the windows through a cell phone tower down the street?
Yeah, so the cell repeaters and Wi-Fi and all this electromagnetic radiation in the environment, people mistakenly think that this is somehow going to act like a shield and block the radiation and make it not appear on any kind of tri-field meter or any measuring device. And that's simply not the case. It's more of an energy medicine, so to speak, where it's stimulating the bodies at the cellular level to create a cellular response to make all the individual cells much stronger and more able to adapt to the EMF stressors. So that's number one on the physical or the somatic level, where the body is experiencing a decrease in stress from electromagnetic fields.
If you're interested, you can click on the Blue Shield ad on the front page of One Radio Network. Use promo code One Radio, or also contact Brandon through his website there when you click, and he'll give you more information. Front page, Blue Shield EMF protection device on OneRadioNetwork.com. Previously with cardiologist Dr. Joel Kahn, 35 years experience in cardiology.
On your commercial break, you hit a hot button because I'm a giant fan of infrared sauna and the cardiac benefits.
Tell us about why you like these saunas for the heart. What does it do?
In Japan, it's a traditional therapy of heart disease to even sick heart patients to sit for 15 or 20 minutes in an infrared sauna, then lie down and rest and hydrate for about half an hour. They call it Waon, W-A-O-N. It means soothing heat. And they've done research studies, like 30 of them, in humans. Anti-ages your arteries and improves the strength of your heart, and it may actually prolong survival in sick heart patients. Anybody can just, again, go to the internet, read about infrared sauna heart disease, or put my name there because I've written many articles about it. Now there's data coming out of Sweden and Finland because they've published some amazing data that number of times a week you're in a sauna, number of minutes each time, you can just track out how long you're going to live. So very powerful therapy by being in, my favorite is an infrared sauna.
Well, these are really, really nice units, and we can get you one for $1,150. That is going to be the best price you'll find anywhere, and that's delivered in the lower 48. If you live outside the lower 48, just email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, and I'll fix you up, and we'll take care of it for you. We'll get you one at a best price, $1,150, and email me, and we'll do it. If you live outside, just let me know where you are, and we ship all over the world, and we'll get you the proper plug. If you live in Australia, in the EU, they have different plugs and voltage there. We get you the proper plug and get you a nice package price, and it's not as much as you think. The Relax Far Infrared Sauna, email me for the price, $1,150, OneRadioNetwork.com. And if I press the right button, we could probably do this thing.
We are listener-supported, One Radio Network.
We're talking with John Lott. He's a PhD in economics, and he's been talking about, writing about several books on guns, and his latest book, I have it here, is Gun Control Myths. Here's an email for you, Mr. Lott. Kind of interesting, I think. Be good to bring up. Good morning. No one talks about the huge impact that pharmaceutical drugs have on gun crimes and these mass shootings. Do they check to see if the person is on antidepressants? Often they do a background check. What does your guest think?
Stupid stuff. You have about half of the basketball shooters were seeing mental health care professionals before the attack.
Hmm.
You know, even if all those were getting these types of medications beforehand. The thing is, that's not going to explain most of those, even those cases, because it's, if there's going to be a problem, it's going to be where you're going to have sudden changes in the medication level that the individual has.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that these individuals are planning these attacks long, long time in advance. I mean, 6 months is a short amount of time for planning these attacks. Something like the Sandy Hook attack was being planned for 2.5 years prior to the attack there. And so, it's just not going to explain most of those things. I think, to me, if you want to try to go and stop these types of attacks, you have to look where the vast majority of the successful attacks occur. And that's what we talked about earlier, and that is 94% of these take place in areas where guns are banned. The successful attackers may be crazy, but they're not stupid. They know they want to kill as many people as possible because they want to get more news attention. And they know the more people they kill, the more news attention that they're going to get. And if they go to a place where victims can't defend themselves, they're going to be able to go and kill more people. And besides, this is a worldwide phenomenon. The United States makes up about almost 5% of the world population, but we make up only about 1% of the world's mass public shooters. There are lots of countries in Europe that have much higher fatality rates from mass public shootings than we have here in the United States. France's rate is about 111% higher than the U.S. rate. Russia's is about 50% higher than the U.S. rate. You have other countries from Norway and Finland and Switzerland, just from major countries, and lots of smaller countries in Europe, Serbia, what have you, that have much higher rates than we have here in the United States per capita.
I'm surprised to hear that. I thought Switzerland had better because it's argued that they have a well-armed militia population, Mr. Lott. Not true. They have more percentage-wise in the United States.
Per capita. Yeah. Well, the thing is, the mass public shootings that they have are all occurring in the same type of place. They basically occur in government buildings where guns are banned.
I see. John Lott, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Do you think there is going to be politically the gun advocates like yourself and others are going to have some real challenges if President Biden? Not president, but a Biden gets in September. Is there anything a president and that much energy towards it can do?
I don't think gun control advocates will be challenged if Biden gets in. I think they'll be able to get what they want to have done. Biden has promised that he's going to get rid of the filibuster. The Democrats in the Senate want to get rid of the filibuster. It's going to be very easy for them to go and pass all sorts of new gun control regulations that they want to go and pass.
So you talked about the Second Amendment that you didn't think much about it in terms, but at some point, aren't we looking at... I'm sorry. As the Supreme Court...
I said I don't make Second Amendment arguments.
You don't make Second Amendment.
I do.
And why is that?
That's not what got me involved in the research. I've been a statistician. I'm an economist. I've done a lot of work on crime generally. What got me interested in the issue was what makes people safer. And just as you can deter criminals with higher arrest rates or higher conviction rates or longer prison sentences, the fact that would-be victims might be able to defend themselves also makes it riskier for criminals to go and commit crime.
Do you think that the judicial system with the sentencing for gun crimes and that are balanced and good balance, or they need to change, in your opinion?
Well, I think right now the judicial system is kind of in gridlock, depending upon where you are.
Yeah.
You have people talk about the 200 judges that President Trump has put on the federal courts, but he's just brought the courts into rough political balance. Democrats control the circuit courts in 24 states and the District of Columbia, which is considered the second most important court, Republicans in 26. But the states that the Democrats control are the ones that Democrats tend to also control the legislative process. And they're passing all sorts of gun control laws in places like California and New York and other places. And the courts in those areas basically approve whatever gun control law they want. At the Supreme Court, though, you have four Democrats on the court who don't believe that there's an individual right to self-defense. You have four Republicans who apparently do believe that there is such a right. But you have John Roberts, who, at least the Republicans are concerned, will vote the wrong way if they go and bring up a gun case.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no real Supreme Court oversight over these circuit courts and the state legislatures, which are passing all sorts of gun control laws, no matter how crazy they are, and how much they hurt individuals being able to go and defend themselves.
Yes.
And whether that's going to change for those who want to be able to let people own guns for self-defense is for Trump to win re-election and to appoint one more member to the Supreme Court who's going to be like a Gorsuch or a Kavanaugh. I don't think we've ever seen such an important election in terms of whether people are able to have guns to protect themselves.
Really?
If Biden wins and the Democrats take the Senate, you're going to see really massive changes in people's ability to go and defend themselves and their families.
Hmm. What do you make of this New York thing and the NRA and this whole story? Any smoke here, any that you know of? Or
right. Well, I mean, here you have an attorney general for the state of New York who, when she ran for office in 2018, promised that she would go after the nonprofit status for the NRA. And it's not really the way you want our legal system to work before there's any evidence or charges, just to go after somebody because or a group because you disagree with them politically, and to go and try to supposedly find some evidence of wrongdoing there. That's not the way things work, or at least the way they're supposed to work. And besides when you look at the claims, at least I'm not an expert on NRA finances, but at least a few things that I can evaluate, it's pretty clear she's not doing a very honest job of trying to present the arguments there. So she goes after Wayne LaPierre because he flies on private charter flights rather than on commercial airlines. Well, it's my understanding that when he's tried to fly on commercial flights in the past, he's a well-recognized figure, and he's attacked by gun control advocates there. There are safety issues and other things that are involved. The attorney general is upset that Wayne takes his wife on fundraising trips. Well, and the attorney general is upset because she says it's improper since his wife's not a paid employee for the NRA. Well, it's true that she's not a paid employee, but it's my understanding that she helps a lot with fundraising. If she's going to be helping the NRA raise money, I don't see any problem with them picking up her travel costs. Anyway, it's just if you're going to go and do a serious legal case, you're going to anticipate what the arguments are on the other side and at least raise them and try to deal with them. But, these types of charges are raised and there's really no serious attempt to try to address them or explain why those types of defenses would be wrong.
Fair enough. Final question, Mr. Lott, before we let you go. And if this is outside of your area of research, please, you don't just decline, and that's fine. But I'm wondering, with all everything that you've seen and looked at over many years, do you think there are more forces against guns than the apparent, ostensible, left-wing kind of socialist idea, right? Left against the right in the media, and we know that they control most of the media. Do you think there are forces other than that, larger, bigger, that are really pushing this anti-gun agenda?
Well, you know, I can't get into people's minds. I mean, the most I can try to do is just explain what I did earlier about the fact that I think, you know, there's a difference in terms of what people think, whether they trust individuals to make decisions or not. And that's just based on the explicit comments that people have made. I see that they don't, you know, even things like health insurance. Liberals think that they should tell people exactly what should be covered by their health insurance, and conservatives want to let individuals make decisions for themselves about what should be covered. And, you know, I see that in many areas, and I don't think the gun debate is that much different. Mm-hmm. If you're going to trust people with anything, I mean, the most extreme thing that you can trust them with, in some sense, is whether or not you have a weapon.
Yes, sir. What's your main goal there at the CPRC, and how can folks find you? What's your website?
Well, the Crime Prevention Research Center. Our website is crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org. Mm-hmm. We're basically a group of academics. As you mentioned, I've had positions at Stanford and Yale and University of Chicago and the Wharton Business School. And, you know, I go and we do research on crime. We have academic board of advisors from people from Harvard, University of Chicago, and other places who are experts in these areas. And we do research on a broad range of crime and policing issues.
Excellent. Well said. Thanks very much for being here. We appreciate your time, sir. And your latest book is Gun Control Myths, John Lott, Jr., PhD. Mr. Lott, thanks a lot. Have a nice day there in Montana. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Okay. Let me just click this over here. What am I doing? Okay, there I am. Well, there you have it. My name is Patrick Timpone. We're going to take a little break here, and then we're going to go to Brazil. Just a few-minute break. We're going to go to Brazil, see what's going on there with Dr. Mark Cercas. Tomorrow at 9 o'clock, interesting fellow. There's a huge kind of a study that they did up in the University of Pittsburgh, and a really geeky kind of brain thing to connect the brain, of course we have mind, then brain, and then body, to the stomach, and it was really cool, very interesting, and kind of gives some credibility to all the things we've been talking about the emotions and affecting the stomach with the IBS and, you know, acid reflux and all that stuff. So there's some real science behind this. And then also then Marley Robbins, who is the magnesium man. It's been a long time. Excuse me there. That was weird. Marley's been studying a lot of cool things about nutrition, especially magnesium, but all kinds of things. And he's going to be here tomorrow around 10 o'clock. So a lot of good things coming up. We'll see you in about 10 minutes or so with Dr. Mark Cercas right here at OneRadioNetwork.com. Stay there.
We are listener supported. One Radio Network.